the same shirt.
It's okay. We won't release this one for a while.
Santa Claus only has 2 hours.
Dude, this one or the big red head. That's what you get.
And it's March, so.
Mrs. Claus really goes into the sex toy. I really can't get it.
Holy shit. Welcome back.
That's right. Welcome back to the Original Liberal Podcast, where we are reclaiming the name Liberal one episode at a time.
From the neo-left.
That's right.
And you may recognize Dan here. He was on a previous episode speaking about his experience in the New York prison system, not as an inmate, but as a correctional officer and a correctional sergeant.
You should have left him hanging a minute.
That's happened when we went on vacation. Met my wife in prison. You know, how long were we there? 30 years in the old.
What's his name?
Ralph, but I call her Ginger.
The curtains match the drapes. All right.
Duct tape's a beautiful thing.
Oh, man.
Well, Matt, I think one of the reasons that it's great to have you back is that I think you and I share a pretty common experience, don't we?
It sounds like we do.
Previously, you may have seen, and it was a pretty popular episode of ours, was where I spoke about my experiences in Freemasonry. And it just so happens that, Dan, that's the thing that you and I share in common, don't we?
Yes, we do. And yeah. I had a similar experience.
I think
Dan didn't know this until you watched the podcast, correct?
Correct. I had no idea.
No?
I mean, I've seen you, and I never really paid. You still see so many people with tattoos and such, but I never paid attention.
Mine all kind
of. It's not
mine, the whole thing, anyways. It's not like one single tattoo that's easy to identify, anyways.
You're right. You'd have to really. I had actually asked you to see it tonight to see it, but I had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that is shared in open conversation.
I mean, not usually. No.
Unless you got a problem, is the only time you'd know.
Yeah, that's right.
So you were a Freemason. You quit the Freemasons just like Ben did. How long were you a Freemason for?
24 years.
How long you were in for what now?
18.
18. Yeah. 18, 24.
18 years. I started when I was 23 years old, I think. 2006. Yeah. How old were you?
I was 27. I had just gotten home, and I left when I was almost 50.
Yeah. What caused you to join?
I was told to join by my future father. You're going to be a Mason.
Okay. Your father-in-law said something.
I had no idea at the time. I mean, it's a small town with one fucking stoplight. So the Masonic building is the Masonic building. Got the big, you know, thing. You know what it was. And it was crossing a firehouse. I was a volunteer fireman. So, I mean, I knew that the building was there, but I had no idea.
Yeah.
But he didn't say it quite like that. It was like, you know, you're interested in being a Freemason. And I was like, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Because I knew
a
lot.
Quick sidebar, I believe on, and for anybody that doesn't remember, I'm not a Freemason, never been a Freemason, don't know much about it. Like, I learned more interviewing Ben than I ever knew before, but I believe you said generally a Freemason won't ask you to become a Freemason, you have to ask to become a Freemason, correct?
My experience is that we were always told, and actually it was very explicitly stated that everybody must come of their own free will and accord, and to be one, ask one, but don't ask. Don't ask someone to be a Freemason.
Yeah. Well,
was that the case back then? You feel like, or?
I think it was because I didn't know enough to ask.
Well, I mean, during your experience, did you find that was
yes.
It was supposed to be the case?
Yeah.
Not that
it wasn't. It wasn't like really a recruitment did anything poster or anything. It
exactly.
Was just,
yeah.
Listen, now I'm a Mason. You want to be a Mason?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I didn't know anything about it whatsoever. I knew they had a chicken barbecue twice a year.
Yeah.
In the back parking lot. I mean, that's right. What I knew about it.
That might have got me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's good. That's what I knew about it.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that it was a charitable organization, that, you know, a men's fraternity and the whole nine. And that, you know, at the time, their big thing was the eyeglasses at the time.
Eyeglasses?
What do you mean?
Yeah. They gave money to some place that donated eyeglasses.
Okay.
Was it your local lodge or like the...
It was like the county thing and
gotcha.
The area. And it changed kind of... every few years about what their big thing was, because you had the problem with the small areas that I grew up in is you had competition between the Masonic Lodge, the Elks, the Moose, you know, pick one, fire departments.
Sure.
Everybody had their own little gig, and they would give money to different charities, so you didn't want to step on one other organization's toes, but not only that, but everybody kind of belonged to everything.
Yeah.
So you look at your schedule, well, this week's Masonic Lodge. And Monday's Firehouse, and Wednesday's was Elks, and you know, and you go on down the month. But
That's one thing about the lodge. It keeps you busy. If you want to be, it keeps you incredibly busy.
So what do you want? Let me ask you two, you guys both, like the elks and the moose, is that similar at all?
I couldn't tell you the first thing about the
elks.
No clue.
I went through the Elks Lodge, and I would put a big negative on that. Yeah. I would liken the Elks more to a Shriner's Lodge. They're more of a, there's always a bar attached.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've never been in a Masonic Lodge where there was a bar.
No.
And alcohol is very frowned upon in every lodge that I've ever been in. I've been in lodges in Pennsylvania and New York.
Yep.
And I've been in Scottish Rite lodges, and I've been in regular Blue lodges.
Sure.
Never has there been alcohol involved.
Well, I had mentioned, you know, my progress, you know, or I guess my journey. And, you know, like, you know, a big part of what I was talking about was from the perspective of a worshipful master. And you shared that experience as the worshipful master of your lodge. But not only do you do that, but you're also elected as the district deputy.
I was a district deputy when I was.
Now, is that elected or appointed?
That was appointed by the state.
That's right. I think I knew that.
State of New York.
Yeah.
State of New York.
So you've been
Grand Lodge of New York.
Grand Lodge of New York, which is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. Is it
Grand Lodge in New York?
Is that in New York City?
Yeah. Absolutely gorgeous.
Even to this day, they can afford to be on Wall Street, huh?
Oh yeah.
That's great.
Where do you think the Wall Street guys go?
Do you think so? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's about as ornate as I've ever seen.
Wow.
And I've been to D.C.
Yeah.
New York's beautiful. Yeah, it's a 250-year-old building. But yeah, I was the DDGM when I demitted.
Yep. District Deputy Grand Master is DDGM. And GM, Grand Master, District Deputy. That's awesome.
Yeah, right worship.
Well, tell us about your journey. Tell us what it was like to go through and what your experiences were.
Not unlike you. I'm sure I went through the same ceremonies as you. And,
yeah.
You know, I was a man, freeborn, of lawful age. And
good rapport.
And good rapport.
Yep.
And I had three guys interview me. I knew all of them, obviously, small town, I knew them all.
We always try to make sure we send people who don't know, if we possibly could.
I don't know if that's possible in my town.
Exactly. You know, we may have the luxury here, but...
No, I don't think so. In a small town like Livingston Manor, where the population's probably... I'll give 2,000 as a high estimate.
It's impossible to not send guys.
It's not. I mean, when you... And I don't want to sound... I don't even know what the word is, uppity. But, you know, your quality of man is much less who want to get involved. I mean, not necessarily bad men, but men that want to get involved in their community. A lot of the Freemasons were volunteer firemen.
Mm-hmm.
They were elks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so these are the guys that want to get involved in their community. So the pickings are small, and I think with me, I asked about it, I was told about it, and then... went in, and it was all the guys I knew.
Yeah.
And instead of wearing a fire helmet, you're wearing an apron.
That's right.
So you think small towns are less selective than...
They have to be.
Yeah.
But this is, I wouldn't say selective. You still have to go through the qualifications.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to go through the same trials that Ben did in a larger mm-hmm. place, or you would hear.
Well, I was raised on an island off the coast of Maine.
Yeah,
I was raised to the third degree in a small lodge off the coast of Maine.
So was I.
One thing I would say about the small lodges, though, and this was absolute, I love this part about it. I want to say his name was Frank, but he was the worshipful master when I was raised to the third degree. And one thing that was great about it is he was given the opportunity to be worshipful master, despite the fact, something you've talked about, he had Tourette's, but he had very bad Tourette's. And remember, we're supposed to do this in a certain specific way.
Going to be difficult.
But it's going to be difficult. But because of the relaxed nature of that smaller lodge, this man who dealt with terrible, terrible case of Tourette's with very diminished self-esteem.
Verbal?
Verbal.
Did he curse?
No curse.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe... I'm not as familiar with the Tourette's thing, as you, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm talking about. But with him, it was tics, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
If not, a hard, very difficult time to enunciate and things of that nature.
Yeah.
But the beautiful part for me was this man who had low self-esteem, who had a hard time talking with people,
mm-hmm.
was told by his brethren to get up there. Get up there, run this for us. We'll support you. And
that's
I love that.
Cool.
I love that.
Nothing's better than that.
How do they do? I think Frank
did a great job. It doesn't matter how he did. I'm sure he did wonderful.
How did he do in his own mind? I mean,
I think,
I'm sure his confidence level went this guy
up. I think it was probably, in that man's life, it was probably one of the best years of his life.
Okay.
It probably changed him.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, this is another example of...
Yeah, unlifting men. I mean,
absolutely.
That's what's so cool about it, like the whole Mason thing. Like, yeah. I've been fascinated by it. Like, I think I said this on the last one, but like... You know, since I was a kid, like, I always, like, it's a secret society. There's all these guys in the church I went to when I was a kid. All the members of the church were Masons. And it's like, I thought they just went out in the woods and wore a robe. Like, who knows what they're doing? Like,
you know, I remember, you know, going, you know, I went in blind.
Yeah.
Totally blind, no idea. So, you know, I went through my initiation the way you did, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hoodwinked and shod, nor shod. I mean,
don't go too far into the details.
I won't, because I gave you shit about it.
I know.
But the guy who was doing it, I knew him very well.
Yeah.
And he's like, put this on, do this. And I'm like, are you sure? Yeah, trust me.
The senior deacon?
Yeah.
The one who led you?
Are you supposed to? That's the most fun job.
I know. I hear you.
Did you ever do the second lecture?
I've never done a lecture. I have never done a true lecture.
Oh, I was with a traveling group.
You guys got to explain. What do you mean by doing a lecture?
You already know that there's three different degrees.
Yep.
Yep, we know 3 degrees.
All right, so in the ceremonies, and I'll be very vague, there's a lecture where you as the initiate are lectured on that particular degree.
May I paint a picture? Imagine stepping into something so different than you've ever experienced in your entire life. But not only that, but you're actually impaired on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And you go through all this, and you have no idea what's going on for most of it. Mm-hmm. Really,
you essentially just
hear voices.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And you go through this whole thing. And when you're done, you've made promises. And it's time, at that point, you're kind of like relieved.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a time, that's the point where a guy steps in and kind of explains to you what
you
just
went through.
So that's
when you start learning. Now you know what you just did, yep.
It is mandated that this person has to sit and be lectured to. And this lecture, again, is a verbatim recital of something from, actually... lectures are in the Red Book. I was going to say in the Grand Lodge books, anything that's in there can be spoken out loud. These are in what we call the Red Book. And
when you look at it as a secretary.
I would say that, from my experience, each lecture was one man who knew how to speak for 25 minutes straight. Was it about 25 minutes in your experience?
Not the second one.
How long was the... Well,
the second one's an hour and 15.
Okay,
if done correctly,
because of all the pointing.
The longest one. The middle is the longest.
Okay, so
the first one's probably about 20 minutes.
Okay, so the lectures.
So you figure the guy's
sitting about there this.
Going, what the hell?
The guy's memorized verbatim, word for word, talking exactly what it's supposed to be for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 minutes straight.
He's done his homework.
Only him.
Only him. Nobody else can do this.
The rest of the lodge is absolutely silent.
Only him. He might have one guy sitting there that's ready to prompt him brain goes a little bit blank. But other than that, this man is on an island giving a lecture verbatim for an hour straight.
Hmm.
Incredible stuff. And a lot of these guys become your 33rd degree Freemasons because they do the hard, heavy lifting.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. But anyways.
I did that.
You did
that? I was in a group of four
God.
We would travel in these different degrees. And all four of us, when we were traveling to these different... Now, our lodges were spread out. I mean, there was 50 miles between both of all, lodges.
Really?
Yeah, wow. The farthest one was 75 miles from my home lodge.
Wow.
But as we're traveling, we would be practicing.
You'd be on the road.
On the road, practicing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many circles I did at work with my book.
That's right.
And they're like,
that's part of the process.
Shut up.
Yeah.
I'm trying to learn this. And I'd walk in circles and at work learning these lectures and these questions and answers.
Sure.
And everything is ritualized. That's what fascinated me about it. When I first got in, I got my book and my Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated with the language of it all.
Yeah.
And
when you say your book and your Bible, like a Bible?
Bible.
Down here, I've never been given a Bible.
Okay, so that's not a standard thing. Okay.
No, okay.
Book and a Bible. And I had a mentor.
Uh-huh.
And he was absolutely fabulous. And you had mentioned in your lodge, as an initiate, if you were asked a question and you screwed up as the master, you would give him the opportunity. Now, I was told there was no second chance that time.
Really?
If you screwed it up, you could try it again at another time.
Okay.
But that time was over.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
And especially in the Delaware Lodge,
sticklers.
They were, three of the guys in that troop that I went with was from there, and they were absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
Great guys,
yeah.
But sticklers.
Wow, that's great.
And at first I was a little taken aback, and you know how it is.
Yeah.
A little jealous that these guys knew this well.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, the competitor in me was like, I can learn this.
Yeah.
They can do it, I can do it.
That's one thing I would say about being a Mason, too, is when you find out what other people are capable of, you think, okay, maybe I'm capable of more than I thought.
I can do that, too. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe I didn't realize people could memorize an hour straight of dialogue.
Yep.
But it's possible.
And that's what prompted me, after being master, to try to learn all of that senior deacon stuff.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great. I loved it. That was the best. So we actually flipped coins to see who was going to do with that.
That's wonderful.
The four of us would be, you know, the wardens and the senior deacon.
Yeah.
Those were the four spots.
Yeah.
And we'd have lodges from all over the lower part of New York State call. They call Peterson up and ask.
Isn't that awesome?
Run a drill for them.
You start knowing people all over the state.
Oh, it's awesome.
People from
the connections you can make.
The connections you can make.
Like you said before, with social media, before social media.
Yeah.
This was long before social media.
Yeah.
Long before cell phones.
Yeah.
But the connection you can make, departmental connections. I had no idea.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
You walk into dinner before the lodge that night, and there's a guy you know, and you had no idea.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But that kind of brotherhood, I absolutely adored it. I loved the ritual part of it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved it. Like I said, I would walk in circles at work. And after a while, everybody knew, leave him alone. He's not crazy. He's learning.
That's right. There are old jokes about that.
Oh,
you know, why is he down here talking to himself?
Why is
he
pointing to the freaking moon?
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of the lectures, you're actually using a stance, and you're pointing at something, and you're explaining
that's exactly
that
what it is.
And going over what it is they just did and what is expected.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's the charge. Mm-hmm. Those are always good because those are fire and brimstone. Those are great. You need to be a little bit of an actor for that. Oh, you will do that. Absolutely hilarious. Tom Kennedy from Roscoe was the best at that. He was bringing forth all hell and fury. We're going to hang you up by your toes if you don't.
That's not part of it, by the way.
No, I'm just being facetious. But we'd all be sitting there in a West snickering. Like guys sitting in a chair, his eyes are this wide. What the hell did I do? But I found that the ritual part of it, and when you get into there, and of course we're all in tuxedos.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you guys did dress up. You guys dressed for the lodge.
Oh, hell yeah. Tuxedos.
Okay.
What did you guys wear?
Here in the South, it was literally collared shirt, golf pants. That's it.
Oh, God. You wouldn't even be allowed in.
Wouldn't even be allowed in. That's
is there a lodge where it's just like jeans and a t-shirt? Like,
a lot of these country lodges out here.
Sure. I hear Florida's like that because it's kind of laid back.
Yeah.
But up there, oh, no, you're in a tuxedo. You can be in a suit if you're not an officer, but if you're an officer, you're in a tuxedo.
Okay.
I still have two tuxedos hanging in my closet.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have a whole closet.
I got the whole purple thing. I had all of that.
Yeah.
I got the ruby.
That's great.
But I love that whole part of it.
Absolutely.
And I'm not a big dressed up guy, but the first time that I was told to wear a tux, I wore a tux and I went up there. I was like,
it's pretty cool.
It's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got, you know, this is cool. I ain't gonna lie. Yeah. I'm getting, you know, I was a title guy. I liked the title part.
Sure.
And I
like you said, that's the most, one of the most
coolest
part. Yeah.
Yeah, you get introduced differently than everyone else. And, you can sit behind a worshipful master and go,
you're a big fucking deal.
But it was fun. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed the ritual of it. And I loved afterwards when they're asking questions, people are asking questions of you and you actually know the answers. Mm-hmm. And you're not just there. I think that's more of my personality and yours, too. I can tell that. You want to help, and you get people in there. Hey, how did you know? How did you figure that out? Or, you know, what do you think this means? Or, you know, what about this? And those were the theological discussions that would start afterward.
That's right.
Over a cup of coffee and cake or whatever it was. And I absolutely loved it, man. Lodge was an event.
You mentioned afterwards, because you're not allowed to talk religion in the lodge at all.
I didn't say we talked about religion.
No. I was saying you said afterwards.
Hold on.
Right?
You're not allowed to talk religion in the lodge.
Correct.
No politics, no religion.
No politics, no religion.
It has to be left out of it. Yeah. It's
funny that we're sitting here on a podcast that we talk about that exact same kind of shit, but I would be all about a club where I'm not allowed to talk about politics or religion. Just leave it the hell out.
You know what else is like fascinating?
Harmony is the
chief. That's awesome.
Fascinating that I just absolutely love what I told my brother when he wanted to get in. Like I told Dale, in a lodge meeting, an open lodge, let's say there's a subject on the floor that's out for discussion. A man stands up, he gets recognized, he speaks his mind, no one says anything, regardless of how you feel about his opinion. You could be completely 180 degrees against his particular opinion. You will not say a word until he's finished.
That's right.
That's awesome.
And then you will be recognized. And it's so, the harmony is such, and everybody knows that you will have a chance to speak and your opinion will be heard.
Mm-hmm.
You will not be interrupted. You won't be talked over. The worshipful master is not going to stop you, even if he disagrees with you. You
no
are allowed
how
to
asinine what you say is in there. It doesn't matter.
If it pertains to the subject and it is relevant to the subject and it's your opinion, you are allowed to complete your thought without interruption. And you won't be talked over. You won't be yelled at. You won't be screamed at. You're not going to get anything done. You just politely say your piece. You sit down and the next guy.
That's right.
There's not many places where
and
you can.
And you
do
can
that.
Get differing opinions from whoever's there. And that was one of the things I really liked about it, too, that every man's opinion counted, no matter whether he was Larry Rockefeller or Dan Taggart. My opinion was held with just as much weight and esteem as Larry's.
Absolutely.
It had nothing to do with the pocket or anything else. He had judges in there whose opinion mattered the same as the guy that plowed the snow at night.
That's right.
It had nothing to do with that. You guys had the same qualifications. You were a man, freeborn, of lawful age. And of moral.
And I was saying that the other night. Once you become a third degree Freemason, you're a full Mason.
That's it.
There are appendant bodies that give you different degrees and honors and all sorts of different things, but when it really comes down to it, everybody's just a man and a Mason, and we're all equal.
That's it. And even as DDGM, I'm just another guy.
This is your deputy grandmaster.
Yeah. Which if there's a vote at that particular lodge, it's not my home lodge, I don't vote. That's not my lodge.
I just
sit behind the worshipful master and just observe.
What the district deputy grandmaster is he is essentially the liaison to a group of lodges from the Grand Lodge itself.
Okay.
He's a member of that district. He's of one of the lodges of the district, and he's appointed by the Grand Master of all Masons in that state to essentially oversee and be the first line of communication from those lodges to the Grand Lodge. Because the Grand Master
is also the Inspector Inquisitor.
Absolutely.
It's Inspector
Inquisitor.
Actually,
yes.
I'll tell you a story on that. So it's a very rare did we ever do daytime degrees, but there was a brother, and this is coming up on COVID, and Eddie, this was his day, all right?
Mm-hmm.
If you see this, I love you, man. So this was his day to become a Master Mason. It was a Saturday morning degree. And not only was he going to go through the degree that morning, but he also had to be tried. Which tried, as I explained, is you ask the questions.
Talked about that in the last one a little bit.
And he responds to those questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no one. Because when you do a Master Mason's degree, there's got to be 15 or more.
It's involved.
It's a lot of men. So you start calling around other lodges, guys you've made friends with, guys you know who can pull things off. It's networking.
Mm-hmm.
And each guy has their specialties. A lot of guys have their specialties.
Yeah. Yes.
And you know this guy over at Saukastee Lodge can do this, and et cetera. So you assemble a team. It's like a heist movie. All right?
he's spot on. Like I said,
Ocean's 11.
The four of us used to be the guys they'd call. They'd call them up.
That's
Peter,
right.
Say, can you get the boys together? I need a degree.
That's right. Yeah. So anyways.
Yeah, it's at the Bellagio,
spectacular.
I had covered everything, and the time was coming up to do this, but the one person I couldn't find to do something was the trying of Eddie before he became a man, because he has to be tried.
Yep.
So I had 4 days to learn all the questions verbatim. In in combination with also having to know my stuff for the first half of the degree, which isn't that difficult from the master's position, except for the fact that you also have to make sure that they have, you have to put them through their quite a lengthy oath of obligation. And then there's a little bit more, et cetera. And you go, and then there's a second half of the degree, which is incredibly involved, and be able to do, you know,
to say the least.
So, 4 days, I had to basically do everything from the East, including the trial of the candidate.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
Which was a little bit to do, and I was feeling good, but I was a little nervous. And it just so happened that the district deputy grandmaster happened to walk in that morning, and he goes, "Yeah, I'm here to oversee your degree. You mentioned quality controls."
Mm-hmm.
On the day that was going to be the most difficult degree I ever had to put on, here is the district. This guy walks in unannounced.
Wow.
And
which is his
when he does that, what he actually sits alongside right next to me, the way me and Dan are right now. If Dan's the worshipful master, I'm sitting where you are, if I'm the district deputy grandmaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have to run everything with this guy right here.
Wow. I bet that doesn't help.
That was fun. Yeah. That was good times.
Depends on the guy.
How'd you do?
I did. Oh, I felt like I was perfect. I was like A+ that day.
Awesome.
Yeah, I felt great.
If you got a district deputy you can trust and not, and you know, like I would have said, hey, dude, whatever you needed, hey, do you know? Can you do the question and answers?
Makes sense. Yeah, I could have done that.
Because you know, when I was DD, I get that a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, I don't have a junior ward, can you?
Sure.
I walk right over the two wards.
That would be great if you're in a district that actually appoints proper district deputy grandmasters.
I thought that, you know, until the end, when the shit hit the fan without, you know, I loved the district, and I got along very well with the masters of the district, and like I said, there was four of us that I still continued that, because I liked it so much, and I got around, and that's how I got my appointment, was I got around. And the three other guys I traveled with were former DDs. So I got around to all these districts, and they saw that the group I was hanging with, you know, when I was learning from them memorization techniques and how to go through this.
Sure.
And Walt Peterson, the guy was absolutely phenomenal lecturer, man. Verbatim. If he said something, you knew it was correct.
Yeah.
He was just so good. And it didn't matter what it was. He could walk into a lodge, and you could tell him you needed. I need the charge from the third degree. Can you? Yeah, sure.
Wow.
Bang it out.
Wow.
I mean, you could ask him anything to do anything.
Anybody I ever heard to do those charges, those long lectures I was talking about, with the lectures, they needed, even if they knew it inside and out, they needed a couple days to get their head right for it.
Not him.
Yeah.
You could just do it on. And I got to the point where I could do all of the lectures for the degrees on command.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they were, I need to, can you open? Really? You don't know how to open.
Yeah, right.
Sure. Which one? Well, I need you to sit in the east.
Well,
hang on a minute here. Tell you what, I'll be junior deacon. You whoop.
Yeah.
But anyway, and you know what I mean by that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I was traveling with that group, so when it came time for a new DD, it was those three.
Yeah.
That, hey, you know what?
They spoke upwards,
you know,
and then you got your appointment. Absolutely.
We listened to this guy, big him DD.
Yep.
And that's how I got to be. And I knew it.
Yeah.
You know, when it happened, I called every one of them. Thanks. Oh, we have nothing to do with it. You know.
When we hit our wall at COVID, and this was 2019, actually just prior to that, as I was the junior warden, now, to get the Mason of the Year award, it's almost always awarded to the junior warden for certain reasons. I don't know if that was the case in your experience, but down here, it was almost always the case. So if you were the junior warden, you were probably going to get that award at the end of the year because you had to do a lot of things. Because cooking dinners for everybody, et cetera, et cetera.
The logistics part.
You had to take care of the body of the law.
Every position has its own
set
responsibilities.
Multiple layers of responsibilities.
But the junior
What's
warden?
The new guy have to do?
The new
show
guy?
Up.
Yeah,
she shows
show
up.
So the new guy that has less responsibility?
Guy,
show up and
the
learn.
Newest guy that actually gets
in. Make him, like, clean the bathrooms.
The newest guy that shows up actually gets into the line of succession with something called the Tyler.
Okay.
All right, the Tyler If you ever, I don't know if anybody ever seen
him. He sits outside, tries to stay awake.
Yeah, so he fends off eavesdroppers, essentially.
He's usually the oldest guy in the lodge.
Yeah, he's the oldest guy in the lodge. He holds a sword. It's quite actually kind of comical.
It is.
But, but
we used to have a guy named Richard Sturdivant. We say, Dick Sturdivant before he dicks you. And Dick was wonderful. Thank God bless you, Dick. He's dead, but... Yeah. You know, he was another one of the old guard.
But you know, there's a treasurer, a secretary, a chaplain, and then there's multiple positions, another five or six.
And you, as a new guy,
so
obviously,
a chaplain is the same.
What they normally do, you know, funerals and blessings of those need done.
Gotcha.
It's an important role. It's more of a.
This person isn't necessarily also like a religious leader outside of the masonry.
No. Well, it's better that it's actually. I kind of found it to be better if it was
if
a gentleman
it wasn't,
who was
they don't screw shit up.
Yeah, he carries his Bible proudly.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You're not.
But he doesn't have to be. You could be the chaplain of your lodge without being.
If you need a chaplain,
master.
You need a chaplain.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right.
If you got a guy who can say something out of a book, he's your man.
Yeah, he can read a portion of the.
Yeah.
Of the
I mean, some of the funeral services that I've been to, they're reading.
That's not good.
It's not good. You're not going to raise a stain.
I didn't get to explain it very well. I mentioned I've been through a few Masonic funerals. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll know what I'm talking about because what you just said is, so you got to imagine that a man spends his life, you know, a good portion of his married life going to this lodge. Now, he's not supposed to go home and tell her much about what occurred.
Yeah.
Okay, she's just trusting he's going to the lodge. He just happens to know some people. And she
cooks some chicken once a summer.
Yeah, every once in a while I get to come to some function here and there. But really, he just gets to go out and do what he wants for a few nights a month.
Yeah.
Well, she's made a sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
She sacrificed part of her marriage to allow him to do this, and she doesn't really get a whole lot of benefit in return. She doesn't even really know the guy sometimes, right? So imagine 20, 30 years of this, the man passes away. Well, when you show up to his funeral, you're justifying those 20 years. That's the way I always thought about it, all right? That 20 years of sacrifice, what you're doing is paying her back on that day. Because if he's a good man who's gone off to where he's supposed to be, that's fine. But she's left behind. And when she just sees 20 guys show up, or 5 guys, or 10 guys from his lodge that honor him and give him a specific Masonic burial the way he wanted his whole life, I see the wife, they couldn't be any. When you do it properly, and it's not reading from a book, it's not cheap, it's not low effort, when you do it the right way,
it'll bring
it makes all the difference to the wife.
Talking about an organization that's built around ritual, I can imagine it's
not about us, it's about her.
Yeah,
it's
all about
her and her kids.
But I understand
kids.
What you're saying.
Yeah,
and really, so what you were saying is when you're reading out of a book,
it loses the effect.
So the quality controls. It's doing things the right way. And
that was all about that. You know, the screw up that I am, you know, there was a few things that I wanted done right. That was one of them.
That's
I wanted to be a correct Mason.
Yeah.
And it was because of the three that I hung with.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did everything the right way.
That's right.
And even when we beat at the lodge on odd nights, what are you doing there? Nothing. Come on over. We're gonna do this. You know, we kind of screwed that last one up. I don't want to do that again. And we'd go over and we'd practice.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd practice. And we'd practice. And we'd practice. And I'd walk in circles and we'd practice.
That's right.
Because we wanted it perfect. You know, and the only ones that knew there was a mistake was the three of us.
Right. Yep.
For the most part. I mean, a lot of guys, it's like any other organization. You get 10% that does 90% of the work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get with a group, and this is my theory on anything, I was in the fire service for 30 years, also volunteer fire. And you knew who you could count on, who you couldn't. When I was chief, I knew who I could count on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same thing in the Masonic Lodge. I knew that these three guys, if I said, listen, they're doing a degree in the manner, I need you to.
Yeah,
no problem.
Yep.
It only took one call, and I knew the four of them would come, and I knew everything was taken care of. And I, even if I wasn't 100% sure the night of who was going to be there, I knew the four of them were coming.
Yeah.
Three of them.
They'd be able to figure
it
out.
And I could put them in anywhere, and it would be perfect.
That's right.
That was great, and I loved that part of it. The reason I got out was because New York State is spineless and nutless, like you said.
Like dickless and toothless? Yeah.
Dickless and toothless.
Spineless and nutless, dickless and toothless.
The story behind
that.
So
you found
that
to be the case.
Well, what happened was I was DD, and like I said, it was a small district by New York City standards. The lodges were, you know, they weren't very aging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this, that. We're trying to get things going, and we got a couple of things going. You mentioned your university. Mm-hmm. We called it a college.
Good. You guys did that too.
So yeah.
You said, you know, you mentioned with the four guys that you could count on. What we did was we group new applicants, new apprentice together, and they would actually, not only would our mentors help them, but they'd be calling each other. It becomes this just like us snowballs.
We didn't go one lodge. We went countywide with our whole district.
Well, good.
Because we were so devoid of quality applicants that, you know, you'd have one in the Manor, one in Calicoon, one in Liberty, and you'd be like, all right, you know, instead of just having this one guy from the Manor, I'd call up Ray Peterson and say, listen, man, you got a guy, I got a guy, Tom's got a guy. Why don't we get them together in Liberty? It's a central location. Let's get them together in Liberty. Let's work on some of this stuff.
That's right.
If they're willing. And, you know, as a new guy, oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
You meet Derek, shared time.
They get shared experience.
Right. You make time, and then all of a sudden, instead of doing one degree here and one degree there, let's do the degree in Liberty for all three of them.
And they all become brothers.
Yeah.
The three of them become brothers.
And not only that, but it brings all the rest of the lodges together.
Absolutely.
So now you got three lodges. Instead of having 10 guys in the lodge,
that's
you got 50.
Yep.
And it's a much better experience with 50 guys.
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
You know, and so that we started doing that, and it caught on.
Yep.
So now the Fallsburg Lodge, which was kind of on its own, you guys are running this degree. We got a guy. Can you? Sure. Bring him over. You know, just make sure he's ready.
That's right.
Because this isn't one of those things where we're just going
to
make sure he's ready.
Here you go.
We're having prep classes
at
this time and place.
Yeah.
If you would like him to come through so it's easier for him, send him to those prep classes.
So, you know, here's the thing. I don't know if you did this or not. This is what I would do. While dinner was, or just before dinner was about to start, we always had dinner before the degree.
Yeah.
Okay. When everybody was eating at dinner, I'd be preparing as the worshipful master. And that candidate who's coming in tonight who's going to be tried in front of the lodge, I would take him back to the library. And I'd talk to him one-on-one. Because I'm the worshipful master, and you know I'm going to treat him like a man. I'm going to say, hey, man, your mentors or mentors say you got this. Let's sit down and go through this real quick together. If he could do it with me in private, that's essentially where I would make the decision.
Really?
Essentially where I would make
the decision. I did the same thing.
You did the same
thing. I used to tell him, I said, listen, you just got that perfect.
Yep.
Now we're going to go do it in the lodge. I want you to look at me right in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Like you did just now.
Yep.
We're going to do the same thing.
Do the same thing. Yep.
And you know what?
That's cool.
You're good.
Uh-huh.
You passed.
Uh-huh.
The only one's going to know you screw up is you and me.
That's right.
So just relax. It's all over.
Yep.
We just got to put the act on for the other guy.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly.
I used to do that all the time. And they'd be like, oh, thank God. And you know what? You get an open lodge with him, and they're banging it right out.
That's right.
And you look over in the west, everybody's sitting there like, oh, my shit.
No bad.
Even his vendor. Yeah, that's my guy. You know, and the relief in their face when you tell them that.
Yeah.
And like, really? Yeah, really. I'm not going to screw you over. Just, I want you to relax. I really want you to take this in. Because this only happens once. I want you to take this in.
Absolutely. That's a big point.
And, like, fathers and sons.
Mm-hmm.
What I really want you to do is answer these questions. And then the last question, I want you to answer the question, I want you to look at your father and wink. Mm-hmm. Look him straight in the face and wink. And I'm telling you right now, the pride in that man's chest is going to explode.
Absolutely.
And it was so wonderful to watch these sons wink at their fathers.
Yeah.
You know, because the person doing the questioning is the worship, should be the worshipful master. And we used to do that a lot too with the foursome, mm-hmm. because quite frankly, most of the masters I dealt with, they could open and close, they could do the routine stuff, but when it came to some of the more intense rituals and the questions and answers and stuff, they had a lot of problem with it because, you know, of course, these guys got jobs. I get it. You know, not everybody can walk around a jail cell or a jail prison, you know, and fucking.
You know what? I think maybe that was my advantage too, because being a self-employed person, I'm not going to tell you what I do, but I have a lot of time. I have a lot of free time by myself, where certain things are occurring, and I have the ability to do that. And I think that would probably work to my advantage too.
Yeah. I'm glad I had the prison hallways.
Yeah.
I mean, it was nice because all the prisoners thought I was crazy. They didn't know what I was walking in circles and pointing.
You were just one of like 30 guys.
What's wrong with this guy, man? Fucking Taggart's out of his mind.
On that note, let's take a little break, and we'll get back into it in just a minute. All right, guys?
All right. Sure.
So we going back into it then? So...
Yeah, we're getting back into it, I guess. Here we are back from break. I had to get my cigarette in.
Sitting here with two ex-Masons, learning a lot. So.
Yeah.
I wish
we could say some of the stuff on camera that we said out there.
I learned an awful lot outside on the break, but
nothing he shouldn't have learned there. Just for the record.
Yeah, for the record, he didn't learn anything we couldn't tell
him. I don't know. I've always been fascinated by the Masons. Like I was just telling these guys before we put the cameras back on, so it's been a lot of fun, not only this episode, but the previous episode where we talked to Ben. Just kind of...
I'm learning a lot. If you stop learning, you might just as well shoot yourself and get it over with.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially me, I'm retired. If I'm not learning something, then what the fuck? Just take it.
So, I said two ex-Masons. Ben, we already know why Ben quit. Dan, why'd you quit?
Well, it's not. Oh, jeez, where do you start? Like I was saying, our district is a bunch of small lodges. And as Ben knows, you're always paying your dues to Grand Lodge per capita. And I don't know about in Maine where you were, but where we were, our lodges were dying. And literally dying. The guys were just getting old. Livingston Manor was, when they built the reservoirs in New York, they had all of these sandhogs, these Union sandhogs. They were based out of Livingston Manor. So the Masonic Lodge in the 40s, 50s, and early 60s was booming because these guys were all Masons.
Absolutely.
So they, you know, you go to a lodge meeting, there'd be 80 fucking guys there.
I've always found that, I always found that interesting that the Masons were able to afford these beautiful buildings during that period of time where nowadays they can barely maintain what they have.
Yeah, well, but they had the lodge, you know, they had the membership. But those guys moved on.
Yep.
You know, they weren't residents. They moved on. They moved on and aged.
Yep.
And the non-recruiting part of it was, and I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, we were encouraged to leave. And I did leave the area.
Yeah.
Because it was depressed. There was nothing to do. If you weren't a civil servant or a logger or a stonemason, sure, but but they were bluestoners.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where Ginger's from. Ginger's from the bluestone area. But anyway, you were encouraged to leave, go to college, get a job, go to the city, do this, do that. So the lodge itself was aging badly. And, you know, when I got in, I went up through the ranks quick as shell. I mean, it was 5 years. I was the master.
Yeah.
But again, with my thirst for the knowledge of it and my incredible, I really wanted to learn that. Mm-hmm. It came easy.
Very compelling. Yep.
So I went from, you know, low boy to master in 5 years, and I led the lodge for 5 years. And in my term, I did my best to encourage the younger generation to take this up, my brother, my friends, and I kind of circumvented the recruiting part of it where I said, remember you asked about?
Yeah.
Sounds very similar to Ben's story, actually.
Yeah. So I got, instead of university, I had college.
Mm-hmm.
And like we were saying earlier, we would run degrees with 3-4 lodges because every lodge in our district was in the same boat I was in.
That's right.
You know, your budget was, we're talking not thousands of dollars, hundreds of dollars.
Right.
You know, we were in debt. We had the Eastern Star with us, and thank God for the women.
Yeah.
Holy cow, Eastern Star. That's
exactly.
The women's part of Masonic.
Yeah.
Okay, so you order the Eastern Star.
You got to be like a wife?
No.
Or that, or are you going to be, okay.
No, but more than likely. And they really are wonderful. They do a lot of fundraising, and they have to have a Mason in their lodge, usually the master.
They have to have a Mason.
So they got
to
at least be, like,
to oversee them.
Mm-hmm.
So they, as long as they're sponsored by a Mason, they don't have to be married to a Mason. They could just, I mean, is sponsored the right word?
No.
You say they have to
overseas the word.
I don't have nearly enough experience.
Yeah, I used to have to sit on them because my ex-wife was a, and her mother.
Eastern Star.
They're wonderful. I have nothing but respect for the Eastern Star. They're based out of Oriskany. So is the DeMolays. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so, you know, as the district starts to smallen down and lodges are closing up.
People
are
leaving the area.
And, you know, the guys are, they're opening the lodges with three.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was hard. So we did the best we could, and we recruited, and it started to work. We started to get some influx, and we started to get some money, and we started to do things, and we started to have some actual cash flow where we could pay our bills. Well, there was one guy, John Wells, you fine cocksucker. May you die, you gravy-sucking pig.
Cheers to that.
We know how
Cheers
feels
to that.
About him.
I want you to die slowly and as painfully as fucking possible. I'd love to see it.
He doesn't mean any of this, by the way.
He was kind of like the guy that had nothing to do. You know, there's no chance in hell of him ever getting laid. But he was the secretary for all of these lodges.
Always seems to be that position, doesn't it? It always seems to be the
and everybody
secretary.
Trusted him implicitly.
Because nobody else wants to do it.
Correct the Monday. For the whole time I was in the lodge, John Wells was the man. He handled everything because they allowed him to. So I became master, and I wanted to audit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, what a firestorm.
Really? We audited every year. I had to sign off on the audit my master's year.
You're supposed to.
Yep.
So is that right in the thing?
And when you say audit, you mean just...
Everything.
Check the books.
Check the books, yeah.
We have a treasurer.
Yeah. Everything that gets spent, just like any organization.
You want to make sure your taxes are paid.
I
want to
give Matt Hitchcock $100. I second it. Everybody voted. Yeah, let's give Matt Hitchcock $100. So the secretary and the treasurer would sign the check. You'd get $100.
Yeah.
That's how bills are paid.
Yeah.
Just like any LLC. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, every organization I've ever been involved in, the fire department, the Elks, the Masons, it's all. But I wanted an audit. I wanted an outside audit. I wanted to make sure, because we were just coming out of the red. And I want to know who we owe money to. I want to pay this stuff off. I want to get back in the black. I want to start moving forward. There's stuff that needs to get done.
Be able to afford a new air conditioner.
Yeah, I want to fix the building. I want to paint the building. I painted the building, actually. I painted on the side.
You end up doing it with your own money.
Painted the building. Cost me $1,000.
Yep.
I didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
But, so I asked for an audit. It got voted in to audit. So, the secretary is supposed to set up the audit. I wait a month. Nothing's happened.
Refused to do it.
I wait another month. Nothing's happened.
Lord, that sounds so familiar.
So I called Tim. He was the master of Liberty. Tim, you want an audit on your books? No, why? Would you? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Called over. I called all the lodges. Everybody ordered an audit. And he was the secretary in every lodge of the district. And he was a pompous ass. And a banker. Mm-hmm. So... Nothing happens for like 3 months. I bring it up in open lodge, and he's sitting there, and I said, Mr. Secretary,
how's that audit coming along?
Why haven't I heard anything about an audit? And he had, you know, I got this, and this. Well, I just so happened, I invited every master from every lodge in the district to that meeting.
Wow.
Open the floor to that. They stand up, every one of them. Such and such from Fallsburg Lodge number 785. I too want to know how our audit's coming. Every single lodge asks the same question. Well, needless to say, that didn't go well. So at the time, I was just the worshipful master of Livingston. John goes to the state level, writes this letter to the state level that he's being harassed by the master of Livingston Manor Lodge number 795. I get a letter from New York State Grand Lodge asking why I'm harassing the secretary.
You're kidding.
No. So I responded in kind. I'm not harassing, I'm asking a question. I went through the whole thing. Sent it out. got a call from the district deputy, Donald Lair, who's a friend of John's. Dan, we need to talk. All right, Don, whatever you want, bud. So we meet for coffee at a local coffee shop.
See, he's drinking the whiskey like I had to when I go through this store.
Well, it's difficult because everything you thought you liked gets harpooned over money and stupidity. And he told me to back off. In no uncertain terms, back off of that audit.
I will not cheat, wrong, and fraud.
And I said, John, or Don, there's only two reasons you would ask me to do that.
No.
And one of them's illegal. I'm really hoping that's not it, because my next call when we separate is to the DA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a sworn officer of the court, and I cannot allow any kind of illegal activity. Not only that, I took an oath. You took an oath. We didn't take that oath to the lodge. We took that oath to God first, and then the lodge.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're telling me is you didn't take your oath seriously. And as another Mason, I can't have that. So disrespectfully, no, I'm not backing off.
Mm-hmm.
You do what you got to do. I'm going to do what I got to do. But I'm telling you right now, to your face, when I leave this place right now, I'm calling the district attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So you do what you think you got to do, but I'm going to do what I know is right.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you wouldn't do that. I don't care what you wish. I asked you to look into something, you're telling me to back off. That tells me what I do think. I hope you're not in on it. And I walked out. And I did. I went to my car. I happen to know the district attorney. Called him. I got a problem. He says, come on in. We'll talk about it. And I said, well, Timmy, and I told the rest of the guys. He said, well, I want to talk to you first. I will interview the rest of them. So I went in, and I told him what I knew. Only about the manor, because that's the only lodge at the time I knew. It wasn't a lot of money, but the fact that it was not there, should have been there, had to be there, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
He said, okay, I'll look into it. And I knew he would. So I got a call about 3 days later from Tim, the guy from Liberty. Did you get that? I said, yeah, I did. Holy shit, this shit storm is going to get big. I said, why? Why is stealing from a lodge going to cause blowback on me for bringing it out?
From the lodge. Like, that's
the crap. He didn't even say that. He just said the blowback, the shitstorm is going to be unbelievable.
Where did
I said, how am I the fucking bad guy?
Where was the shitstorm going to come from?
And he's like, this is something I'm telling you right now. I got you. He said, I'm going to be honest. I said, you have to be. The DA's going to talk to you. You what? Are you in on it too? And I hung the phone up. Well, about 25 minutes later, he's standing in front of my house, and he was fit to be tied. And he said, you're calling me a thief? I said, if you're fucking in on it, I am. And this went up with the other three lodges. I mean, everybody was calling me an asshole, because John was so respected and everything else. And I said, why didn't he just do the audit?
Yeah, but nobody cares. Nobody would step up and be
and
like,
he said it's not that much money. I don't care if it's a fucking dollar.
Right.
I asked where the money was.
Right.
So this went on for months. You know, I went into the DA like four times. They called me in. I had troopers bringing me this and that.
That's wild.
It was nuts. I had people from Grand Lodge driving to my house.
Jeez.
We got to talk to you. So who the fuck are you? I'm such and such with Grand Lodge. Says, you ain't got a phone. So this line and the complete whitewash that the Grand Lodge of New York State wanted to do. Listen, we can't afford a bad publicity. Right?
That's what I was going to say. It was about,
no,
we're not putting that light
losing,
on the Freemasonry.
We're losing our membership as it is. We're trying to get back. And if this gets out in the press, do you have any idea the firestorm that's going to come out with this?
That's right.
You need to back off. We'll reimburse your lodge with anything. I said, he's a thief. What are you going to do with him? Well, you know, we'll deal with him. So,
in their mind, they're just being pragmatic.
Yep.
They're just doing things the right way.
So Don Lair shows up again. we weren't really good friends, but I knew Don. I had some respect for him at the time. And he calls me again for coffee, and he said, listen, I'm not in on this. I have nothing to do with this. I'm just trying to protect the lodge. Mm-hmm. I said, well, that was the other second. That was the second one. Mm-hmm. You have nothing to do with this. He says, no, and I want you to know I sent this in. He pushes the piece of paper when I read it, and he's pushing for an audit with Grand Lodge. I said, thank you, Don. That's right. Appreciate your effort. He said, but this is the other thing. They took him out of position. They took their appointment away, so he's no longer district deputy.
Wow.
I said, so this is how it's going to be? He said, yeah. Then he hands me another envelope. I've now been dismissed from master of my lodge.
Whoa, that's hard to do. It's easier to remove the district deputy than it is to remove a sitting worshipful master, really. By far.
So I went to the lodge. They replaced Don Lair with me. Okay. In the midst of it, they have replaced Don Lair with me, and I didn't realize. So now I'm pushing for this audit, and the whole nine, the district attorney calls Wells in. He lives in Pennsylvania, works in New York, and he's in New York lodges. He disappears. All of a sudden, John Wells is gone.
Whoa.
I mean, gone.
Any explanation?
Nope.
Nothing.
DA says to me, everything's been resolved.
Wow.
So where is he now? You know, he's
like,
no idea.
Do you think he was like a witness protection type guy?
I don't know. Grand Lodge in New York State.
He was a shady character in witness protection, and they had to protect their asset.
So I resigned as DD and demitted, and that's the end of that.
Wow. That is a wild story.
It's a fucking cliffhanger, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know whatever happened to John.
Jeez, man.
Wow.
The whole thing, it sounded like it took 6 months. It took 2.5 years for this to go, and I didn't put... Don resigned, got his resignation, and then I was made DD, but the guys that I ran with said that the Grand Master for New York State actually doesn't do the appointing. He just signs it.
Just signs, yeah. Of course, yeah.
You know.
Yep.
So they told me to take it, so I did. But then all this came down, and I don't know whatever happened to John Wells.
That's a wild story, man. I don't think
it
really is.
But it was always great. Yeah. But I'm like, still, so Manor Lodge now is defunct.
It is defunct now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So is Liberty. So is Fallsburg. And
what lodge number were you?
795. Wow. No, 91. 791.
Yep. The lodge number is the order which they were given a charter.
Okay.
So if you go to lodge number one, you're going to the first lodge.
St. Charles, Boston.
We were 353. Yep.
St. Charles, Boston.
And that's
lodge number one.
In the country?
In the state.
In the state. Okay,
yep.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yep.
The oldest lodge in the country is St. John's Lodge, Boston, number one.
Yeah.
That's the oldest lodge in the country.
Wonder what year they're chartered.
1724.
Whoa, okay, cool, yeah. 1724, yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Those are the guys, and you know who started that lodge?
Nope.
Samuel Adams.
Sam Adams,
yeah. Oh shit.
We should be drinking his beer, shouldn't we?
We should,
yeah.
I love Sam Adams,
yeah.
Senior.
Senior.
I was just about to say,
sense.
You're talking about 1724,
yeah.
Like that's
yeah. St. Charles Lodge also had Paul Revere in it, it had Sam Adams, it had the Adams Boys. It had Payne, it had all of those guys that you're like, all came out of that one lodge.
That's super cool.
That is very cool.
And you know, because they have to keep minutes, and they have to write, you know, they're signing all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
When you go into the records of that lodge, you're finding autographs
from
friggin' Sam Adams and John Hancock. And
you go to the records of that lodge, I'd love to read the page that said, Brother Adams... recommends we go to the harbor and throw all the cookies into the harbor, seconded by Brother
Paul Revere.
Paul Revere, thirded by Benjamin Franklin, all in favor, yes.
That's right.
We're going to be right back.
That's right.
Ben Franklin was amazing too?
He was.
Later in his life,
yeah.
He was. Before they sent him to France, they raised him.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Ben Franklin. As a historian, you should know this. Ben Franklin was quite the ladies' man.
I do know that. I didn't know he was a Mason, though.
He had a Santa Claus thing about him. So they sent Ben Franklin.
Girls love Santa Claus, man, that big red sack.
And he was a night owl and a drinker. So they said to Ben Franklin, and the reason they made him a Mason was to send him to France. The Masonic Lodge funded Ben Franklin's trip to France.
Yeah.
So that he could get the French into the friggin' revolution so he could win.
Yeah.
So if you really want to know it, the reason we're Americans is because Ben Franklin liked to fuck French women. And get drunk.
It is spectacular.
Yeah, a lot of truth in that.
And that is one of the reasons that Thomas Jefferson never became a Mason.
Okay.
Because he despised the fact that they used that to get France into the war.
Really?
Jefferson was a raging lunatic.
He despised the fact that they used what?
The Masonic Lodge and alcohol
to get French into the war.
With Ben Franklin to get the French into the war.
Huh. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Me neither.
Jefferson was a pompous ass. Nobody liked him. All the books I've ever read are all...
I love that guy.
Yeah.
I fucking love Thomas Jefferson, man. Yeah.
He was definitely a loner.
He was a loner, there's no doubt. He talked about things like the Jefferson Bible.
Yeah.
He obviously had a lot of time on his hands if he's doing the Jefferson Bible and things like that.
If he wasn't masturbating, he was fucking his slave. So, yeah,
that Jefferson name
that's
is...
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a few babies.
Yeah. Just probably shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. It's real history. Look, it's real history.
That actually happened.
Those guys, though, think about it. Those guys in Boston, the Sam Adams, Thomas Paine, those guys, Paul Revere, the guy that actually did the ride, they were some badass dudes.
Yeah, they were badasses. That's right.
I mean, you're not... It isn't like today where I'm going to have a podcast. And,
right.
These guys were committing treason.
If they lost, they were dead.
The greatest power on the planet.
They would have been hanged, drawn, and quartered.
That's right.
Without even a trial.
Yeah. Well, they probably would have got a trial.
No, they wouldn't.
No.
The governor of Massachusetts? The
monarchy won. There's no trial.
They don't have that.
The king is
gone. Governor of Massachusetts would have said, you guys are guilty. I'm going to hang all of you.
There would have been a trial. I think that that would have been handled by the governor of Massachusetts.
No.
That would have been handled by the king of fucking England. Like,
and he's gone.
They would have hung
them
guys.
Whatever the king says goes.
Heads on a
parliament. There was parliament.
When he received a parchment with all their names on it, basically saying "fuck you," he knew what his hit list was. He had a hit list right then and there.
There absolutely was parliament back then.
But King George had all the juice.
Nah, parliament had most of the power in 1776.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I disagree.
Okay. No, I mean that's a fact.
Wow, interesting.
I still disagree.
Yeah.
I love Dan.
They were 5 days' voyage, 2 weeks' mail.
Yeah.
The governor of Massachusetts had authority over the government.
A rebellion against the crown would have been handled, and they would have carted those dudes straight to London and tried them.
No,
publicly.
They would have hung them right in his.
The result would have been death.
I can see that. They would probably make a local example.
Yeah.
Out of them, for anybody who might think about trying to do what they did.
I think they'd have been a local example out of some more localized people, but I really think, I don't know, it doesn't matter. They would have killed them all.
Yeah,
that's
what
they would have killed them all.
Well, he said, either we all hang together or we all will hang separately.
Yep.
Yep.
That's a fact.
That's a quote from Franklin.
That's a fact. Took
Franklin had some great quotes, man.
But those guys had such nuts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It was a special time.
Stupid brass.
It was a really, really special time.
Yeah, for sure.
But you know, you know why? I have a theory on this, and the reason I think they had such brass balls was they were the descendants of everybody who came across that big fucking ocean to conquer a new land.
Yeah.
And then maybe they're the kids of those people or whatever.
Yeah.
But everybody who stayed behind, who wanted to live under the king and be told what to do and be a subject, stayed in Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody with the frontier spirit was going to make a different decision, and that's what they did. Is they came to Boston. They came.
And what happened to that?
What's that?
That particular spirit.
That spirit.
That was what being American was all about.
When life
sad.
Gets easier, easy, you know, it's that trite thing that people say.
Oh,
you know, easy times make for weak
soft
men. Yeah. You know, hard times make for strong men.
Life's been easy for a long time, though.
It has been.
And
you know,
it's easier and easier.
We did a hell of a job of making a great country that was where people could reach their dreams and survive.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, 100 years ago, it was still brutal.
Yeah.
Even just 100 years ago, people were expecting to lose children. People were expecting to lose children and wives and childbirth, you know?
The Great Depression, 25% unemployment, World War II, like...
really, post-World War II is when it started to...
Yeah.
Really, yeah. Truly, yeah. When there was no...
That's when life got easier and easier and easier.
For sure.
No, Eisenhower hit it on the head. I mean, that's...
The military-industrial complex?
That's when shit started to change.
Really. Yeah.
That's when you lost your democracy. And we're not a democracy. We never were. That's when you lost the republic, was right then.
Yeah.
When they realized that, military, industrial, we can make money.
Dan, have you ever seen a movie from 1978 called Network?
Absolutely.
You know exactly what I'm talking about, yeah. Don't you? In the 1970s, they knew the republic was lost, and they put Ned Beatty at that table, talking to Howard Beale, and explaining to him very succinctly that there are no more nations on this planet.
Yeah,
all there is IBM and ITT.
They are companies.
Great rant.
great rant.
It is.
And it's very, very accurate. We knew this in the 70s.
I've never seen the full movie, but I have seen the rant.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And I had to explain to my daughter and my sister that of all the nations on the planet, and they're like, oh, they're women's rights. You know, listen to me. There's 182 nations on this planet, 12 of which will allow you to live if you can't breed. Shut the fuck up. Yep. So, you know, think about that for 30 seconds. And that's the way it is.
We have luxury opinions now.
Yeah.
We have opinions that we would never have had any luxury to carry a few decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as things get... more simple and more simple, and things get more free, and the green grass fields, which the bunnies eat, right? It just looks like all the food should be free, right? But they never realize how it got there. You know, they forget. And we've forgotten. There's no doubt about it.
We allowed a generation to grow up.
It's all coming to a head, though. It's going to get harder now. I think it's gotten easier. It's going to start to get harder.
Well, that's the cycle.
Yeah, that's the cycle.
It's coming around.
Yep.
There's actually a theory from biology called RK selection theory. Here's maybe the one thing I know that Dan doesn't. All right? You ever heard of this, RK selection theory?
No.
It states in biology that when the environment changes around an organism, it changes its survival strategy. In a low-resource environment, it has a very difficult...
Much as well.
A very different survival strategy than a organism in a high resource environment. Competition becomes makes it harder to live in a high resource environment. Therefore, you just start breeding like bunnies, and everything should be free, and so on. And it starts shaping people. And this, because of this biological reality, that's essentially how people form their political opinions. Is if they've lived in a luxury life, they tend to be more liberal because it seems like everything should be free and competition isn't fair. They'd rather go towards socialism because competition essentially is capitalism, right?
Yeah.
It's liberty, liberty competes. Whereas if you've grown up in a low resource environment and competition was necessary in fitness and strength and rules, this man right here, but rules that you determine who really is the meritocracy, right? That's going to have a very different political opinion as an extension. And we have definitely, over the course of time, gone from the carrier, the K in the RK selection theory, to the reproductive, where we literally just breed to survive as a species rather than actually having to be fit and strong. And we're now literally to the point where breeding is just its own end, and everything should be free and sex is easy. And
that's it. Let's go to strip
joint. That's right. That sounds good to me. Actually, it's about time. On that note, is there anything else you wanted to add before we leave?
No, this one spiraled into really bad.
Nah, it spiraled into really good. Yeah.
Keep it going. Keep it going.
That's what it's all about.
I thoroughly enjoyed our time. I really did.
Absolutely, man.
And we're going to have you back for a third one.
We're gonna have Dan's moment.
Yeah.
Where he comes in for 90 seconds and rants about something.
Oh, man. All right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's just what people want to see. Santa getting pissed off.
We'll have him on at Christmas time.
There you go.
Well, you'll do better than Billy Bob Thornton did with that role, so...
Well,
I don't know, man. That was a great movie.
Well, gentlemen.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Cheers, my man.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. And
cheers to you.
Sorry the same thing happened to you that happened to me.
It's how life goes, baby.